Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Bloggers have long maintained an anything-goes mentality. You'll find blogs that badmouth celebrities and at times say harsh criticisms aimed at politicians. Recently, the office of Bronx DA Robert Johnson issued a subpoena against one such blog, Room 8, a website about New York politics, demanding information that could have identified one of the site's anonymous bloggers. Joining us to talk about what happened is Ben Smith, co-founder of Room 8 and a reporter for Politico.com. And on the phone, joining us in a few minutes, will be Paul Allen Levy with Public Citizen. Ben, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Ben, how and when did you receive this subpoena?
We got it in January in the mail, and it said on it, you know, do not disclose the subpoena in big letters.
So what was your, now you got it, what, at your home address?
My partner's home address, which is, you know, it's our business address.
And what was your reaction? Did you... believe it? Did you think it was real?
We thought it was a joke for a minute, and because it just seemed so strange. I mean, you know, I'm a professional journalist, and prosecutors don't usually go sending out subpoenas to news organizations, and when they do, it's typically done with great care.
So when you got it, did they tell you what it was about? Did they tell you what they wanted to know?
Well, no, they didn't, and I mean, once we figured out it was real, you know, I called the assistant district attorney and said, and asked what it was about, because, you know, we are very loath to identify the people who write, you know, often critically of politicians anonymously on the site. But obviously, you know, if they're investigating a murder and somebody was found face down on a keyboard and somehow the IP address is going to help find the killer, I mean, you know, if the crime has nothing to do with the speech, you know, we'd obviously cooperate.
But they didn't.
And they just absolutely refused to tell us, said other bloggers had complied with their subpoena, and we should too.
Now, partly, I guess, as a result of some attention to this or for whatever reasons, the Bronx DA has now withdrawn the subpoena, which is why you're talking about it this morning. How did that happen?
Well, we got this very good pro bono lawyers, and which I think not all bloggers would be lucky enough to have, because there's not, like, a lot of money in this. And you know, we filed a motion in state court to quash the subpoena. First we said, you know, are you serious about this? This doesn't seem like a great idea. You know, do you want to tell us what this is about? You know, no. They finally, I think they sent us four subpoenas in the end. Went back and forth with them.
Four.
Yeah.
Was it each one requesting additional information?
Yeah, they kept expanding what they wanted. I mean, it wasn't just one blog. They wanted the identity of 12 different people who'd written on the site. They sent us this whole long list of things that had been written on the site. They want to out each person who.
Now, this was including some people who had posted comments.
This was both bloggers and commenters, including the blogger in question had mostly been attacking. And this is not like, you know, this was not the New York Times. These were often fairly vitriolic political attacks on members of the Bronx Republican Party who were allied with the district attorney, and at times criticism of the Bronx district attorney himself who sent the subpoenas.
Now, we have on the line with us now your attorney, Paul Allen Levy, with Public Citizen. Thanks for joining us this morning on WNYC.
Yes, I apologize for being late.
Now, let's just – that's okay. There's some evidence now that the Bronx district attorney was investigating something other than speech, that there's some kind of harassment investigation going on. Tell us about that.
Well, they didn't tell us that. They were very unwilling to tell us anything about the investigation they were conducting, but to the extent that they're willing to tell us anything, they suggested that there was some sort of signaling behavior going on, and they used an analogy to a child sex ring where somebody goes publicly and sort of indicates that something's available for delivery and they're using a code to do so. We know now that the Bronx Republican leader is claiming that the investigation was about something else, but we haven't heard that from the district attorney's office. And I guess the question is whether the district attorney's office has been disclosing to the Republican leader the nature of an investigation he wasn't willing to tell the court about in response to our motion to quash. I think the burden really ought to be on the DA's office to say what it was doing. I'm glad to speculate, if you want, about how one might have reacted to had the DA's office said, this is what we're investigating. But I think the burden really ought to be on them to explain what they're doing.
My guests are Ben Smith, the co-founder of the blog Room 8 about New York City politics, Paul Allen Levy, his lawyer, who was a pro bono lawyer for Room 8. He's with Public Citizen. Phone number here at WNYC, 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. I'm Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. Curious if you think the subpoena was appropriate, if you think there are circumstances in which it would be appropriate to subpoena a blogger. Give us a call, 646-778-3729. 783729. Ben, can we back up a little bit? What is this about? What is going on in the Bronx that is provoking all of this discussion and interest by the DA's office?
Well, I mean, we'd love to know. And as Paul said, the DA has not told us. And so anything that we're speculating on is speculation. I mean, the Bronx is a very strange place. There's a very there's a sort of rump Republican Party. The whole place is run by Democrats. The last Republican was dragged away in handcuffs a few years ago. And the remains of the party is kind of run by, I mean, there's only a half dozen Republicans, but there are six factions among them, and one of the other factions controls the party.
Now, you're referring to, when you say dragged away in handcuffs, you're referring to the former state senator, Guy Vilela.
Who's the last elected Republican in the Bronx.
Who I understand still has some influence, or may.
You know, I think he's of a different faction than the faction that now runs the party, and I think it appears that somebody from his faction, or that's what they think, was criticizing them on our blog, and they think that was linked to the chairman Jay Safino sent me some quite scary looking harassing letters that really are quite different from what was on the blog. They're full of racial slurs and sexual slurs and really violent threats, which was quite different from what was on the blog. But he thinks they're linked, and he thinks that's what the DA was investigating. But really, I have no idea what's going on in the Bronx.
I should say that we did reach out to the Bronx DA's office. They gave us the same statement, which they've given to other news organizations. It is, the subpoenas had nothing to do with any critics of this office or of any elected official. The action was taken as a part of a legitimate effort to look into allegations of criminal conduct. Some staff members believe the subpoenas would prove to be a probative value regarding a specific issue. The district attorney reviewed the matter, determined there was not significant enough value in issuing the subpoenas at this time, and directed that they be withdrawn.
Just a comment from a sort of longer view about this kind of problem. It may well be that the solution to this problem is to have a process in place whereby a junior assistant in the district attorney's office doesn't get to go off and issue a subpoena to a blogger without some review and certification by more senior people in the office. Yeah. For example, in the United States Justice Department, there are guidelines which exist to limit subpoenas to journalists. And, of course, that's a sensitive subject. I'm talking to journalists here. But I think we all recognize that there are circumstances in which it is legitimate to send a subpoena to a journalist. On the other hand, there are First Amendment concerns on the other side. And maybe the way to avoid this kind of problem in the future is for the Bronx District Attorney's office to sort of lead the nation by creating guidelines by which they will determine in the future whether they're going to issue subpoenas to identify bloggers. And that way, you get the senior heads in on the situation early, and wiser judgments are made in the first place.
Well, this raises the question, because the blogger, I mean, I don't know if you know who the blogger is.
I
don't know who the blogger is. But the blogger was not, strictly speaking, a journalist, or at least was not acting as a journalist,
no.
It seems, in this context, was just acting as,
well,
a,
was expressing,
as a critic.
Well, that's a kind of journalism. I mean, it was more probably crudely cast, but it was the sort of criticism, throw the bums out, they're all corrupt, that you can read on the op-ed page in the New York Post every day.
But, Paul Levy, should one be able to go on the Internet and say, you know, and sort of deliver harsh criticisms anonymously? Is that sort of fine?
Absolutely right. Just as one can go publish a newspaper and make harsh criticisms, if there are harsh criticisms that are made that are actionable. And generally speaking, if what we're talking about is harsh criticism, the remedy is defamation action in a civil context. Thankfully, we don't have criminal libel laws in this country anymore.
All right. Well, let me just push you on this a little bit, because you know, I mean, as I'm sure, like Ben and sort of every other, you know, journalist in the world, all kinds of people come to me anonymously and say all kinds of, you know, negative things about all kinds of people. And, you know, sometimes those people have very,
And you intermediate is your point.
Exactly.
And the scary thing, both the wonderful thing and the scary things about the Internet is that it's not intermediated.
Right.
And so there's one, but on the other hand, there's one level of credence that's placed in things that are said in what people refer to as the mainstream media, the MSM, and a different level of credence, that is to say, not necessarily that much, that's placed in blogs. And individual posters on blogs earn their stripes and their credibility over time by, you know, the kinds of things they say and don't say.
And we think our readers are smart enough basically to figure that out and to see, you know, here's an anonymous guy, clearly has this very, you know, a chip on his shoulder, an axe to grind, whatever, clearly has a very strong point of view.
But on the other hand, if something is said which is truly defamatory, or indeed, you know, sort of threatening, and you can have threats that are sort of pursuable that are made in an Internet context, there is a solution, and that is you sue the John Doe, and you establish to the satisfaction of a court that you have a valid claim and there's evidence to support the claim, and then the court says, okay, ISP or blog host, you have to identify the Doe, and the defamation action gets to go forward. And we've actually litigated lots of cases in all parts of the country, including in New York, and that's what courts do in that circumstance.
Right, but Ben,
so there's a remedy.
Well, Ben Smith, I mean, you're an extremely respected journalist, so does sort of having, you know, your imprimatur on this site kind of, you know, suggest to people that, you know, sort of you, Ben Smith, are somehow, you know, approving or have, you know, sort of applied the same standards that something that you would say put in your blog on Politico?
Well, I wish I was extremely respected, but mostly by my children.
I believe that you are.
But no, I mean, I don't think, I mean, no more than the fact that it's, I mean, I, you know, helped set up this site and I love a lot of what's on it. And a lot of what's on it is great and reliable and interesting, but it's also open to everybody. And some of what's on it, you know, I totally disagree with or think is dumb. I mean, it's, and that's, you know, I mean, any more than I think Arthur Sulzberger is responsible for the comments in the comment section of the New York Times. That's just like, the new world.
We have a comment from our website. It says, let's remember the DA is investigating death threats that were sent to Jay Savino and Don Sandow. And Beth, Ben, you can explain who those are. The letters, according to the Village Voice, mention that the person making the threats had been blogging against them and harassing them in the Internet. So isn't it logical for the DA to question the blogger who's been smearing them for over 2 years?
Ben, why don't you go first, and then I'll
chime in. I mean, these are letters that Jay Savino facts actually showed to me and showed to a couple of other reporters yesterday.
And explain who Jay Savino is.
Savino is the current chairman of the Republican Party.
And Don Sandow.
Sandow is a board of elections official, and the board of elections is a patronage organization.
And she worked for Guy Vilela, right?
I don't want to get too deep into the detail here, but she's an ally of, you know, of the Bronx Republicans. And and these letters were, yes, full of very scary stuff. But we have not heard from the district. You know, this is something that the Bronx Republican chairman on his own, you know, to his credit, produced yesterday out of the blue. We have heard nothing from the district attorney about the connection between these letters and these blog items, and they don't sort of instantly strike you as being the same voice.
And that leads, I think, to the legal question, if you will, and it's a political policy question as well. Let's hypothesize that you were certain that the person making the threats was also participating in a blog somewhere. Does that mean that everybody who criticizes Don Sandow on a blog anywhere is subject to being identified?
Because there were 12, and they were asking for 12 or 13 different people to be added.
By the end, it was 24.
Did the people who were the people whose names you were requested, that were requested by the DA, do they now know that they were being sought after?
Well, one of the problems in the case is that there was a legend on the subpoena that says, do not disclose the existence of the subpoena. So when we were getting to move, ready to move to quash the subpoena, we said to the district attorney's office, gee, we'd really like to be able to post notice on the roommate website telling people that their identities are being sought so that they can, you know, get lawyers themselves and protect their anonymity. And the DA's office said, no, you can't do that. They were threatening criminal prosecution.
Is there any example? I mean, you know, this case, the subpoena's been withdrawn. It doesn't sound to me like there's any evidence that anybody was dissuaded from posting items online as a result of this action. Are there any other cases?
No, I think that's wrong. This Republican dissident took his blog, vanished from our site in April, so something dissuaded him.
Because he learned of the
We had not notified him, but I suspect he may have bounced off this investigation. You know, I have no idea. But the items are down from the site.
But at that person at that time in April, he wasn't aware that there was.
You know, we don't know. We don't know.
He didn't learn from you.
No, he didn't.
That there was a subpoena.
He did not learn it from us. I think that's all we can say.
Right.
I mean, the district attorney's office told me when we were finally getting. We told them, you know, you have to let us do this publicly, or we're going to sue you for the right to describe it publicly. I was told by the assistant district attorney that the folks we're investigating know about the investigation. Whether that knowledge existed at the time the blog post was pulled down, of course, I have no idea.
Do you know of any other cases where a judicial subpoena to reveal the identity of a blogger or a commenter on a website has been successful?
They succeed in numerous cases, either because the individual can't find a lawyer or can't afford a lawyer to defend themselves, or because somebody manages to find a lawyer to defend themselves and the judge looks at the situation and says, you know what, there's really enough evidence that there's something bad going on here that I'm going to let the subpoena go forward, and you defendants, you know, you may not lose in the end, but you're going to lose your right to speak anonymously for now. And I'll give an example. It's a particularly seamy case, but there is a law school rumor blog involving Yale University, where a former Stanford student who was going to Yale was very nasty things were said about her, and she managed to find a pro bono lawyer, Mark Lemley, a professor at Stanford, to help her out with the case. She brought a suit for defamation. The judge looked at the Doe managed to find counsel. Actually, I believe was appointed by the judge to provide representation. The judge looked at the situation and said, you know what? There's enough here. We're going to identify the defendant, and the defendant's going to have to be identified. And it's perfectly appropriate. That's the process working the way the process should work.
We have to wrap up here, but we can continue this conversation online at the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org. Ben Smith of Politico.com, co-founder of Room 8. Any long-term effects, do you think, from this incident?
Well, I think this incident winds up sending basically the right message, which is that, you know, we are going to certainly be very aggressive about protecting the anonymity of people who write on the site, and other news organizations should as well.
And to second, you know, that people whose anonymity threatened, there are lawyers out there who are willing to do these cases. There's actually a small coalition of public interest groups and law school clinics that handle these cases. If your anonymity is threatened, reach out. But on the other hand, don't think you can get away with murder on the Internet, because if you are doing wrong, you will be identified.
Thanks very much, Paul Allen Levy with Public Citizen, joining us on the phone, joining us in studio. Ben, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Andrea.
Co-founder of Room 8, reporter for Politico.com. When we come back, are your brain cells dying in the summer if you're in school? More of that in your calls after this.